This episode of the CMO Suite is brought to you by Connectivity Strategies, specializing in micro-targeted full-funnel media strategies for clients like WWE, Corona, First Watch, Coke, and more. Connectivity Strategy, national strength, localized approach. Visit them at connectivitystrategy.com and Tumi. Product quality and selection are key attributes that have made Tumi the leading international business accessory and travel lifestyle brand. Simply put, there's no other product made like Tumi. This is what they call the Tumi difference. And last but not least, No Kid Hungry. We are incredibly proud that we make a contribution in the name of each of our 2019 guests to No Kid Hungry. Your tax-deductible donation will help us provide vulnerable kids in America with nutritious meals so they can focus on being kids, not being hungry. For more information, visit nokidhungry.org. Stacy, get us started in the show.
You're in the CMO Suite, the podcast for marketers who want to be in the know, presented by Connectivity Holdings.
Hello and welcome to the CMO Suite. I am your host, Sean Halter, and this is New York Week. I'm calling it Legends Week, and co-hosting with me and helping to produce is my great friend, Stacy Horton. How are you, Stacy?
Thank you. Are you calling me a legend as well?
Sure. Thank yes.
You.
Why not?
Thank
yes,
you.
Absolutely. You are a legend. And with us on the show is Alberto Bria. First of all, welcome. Hello, Alberto.
Thanks for having me. Can I be a legend as well?
Yes. Jump in. You're on the
it's
mic,
the
my friend.
Club.
It's awesome. The Legend Club. Alberto, you're currently the chief growth strategist for Rise Consultants. You started your own consultancy, correct?
That's correct.
And so where were you just prior to starting that, if you don't mind us talking?
Oh, my God. I have been, well, before that, I was at Ogilvy.
Yeah. And what was your position when you were at Ogilvy?
Ogilvy, I was head of engagement and strategy. And that was my second tour at Ogilvy.
So you had been there before?
Yeah, I worked there for 5 years in their consulting division. And then they called me back and did 3 more years there.
Where'd you grow up?
That accent is coming from Dominican Republic. So I am what they call a Dominican York. So I have lived half of my life in Dominican Republic, half of my life in New York.
And you call that a Dominican York?
Yeah. You know, it's like, actually, the Dominican accent is quite popular in these days. You know Cardi B?
Yes, of course I know Cardi B.
So Cardi B. Exactly. So Cardi B is half Dominican and grew up in New York.
So they have these things in Atlanta. They have these people they call halfbacks. And a halfback in Atlanta is somebody who moved from New York. They went down to Florida. It was too damn hot, so they moved to Atlanta, which is about halfway between. Now you've learned something. If we learn nothing else on this episode, if we ramble on for 15, 20 minutes and nobody else learns anything, now they at least know what a halfback is. They know what
Dominican York.
A Dominican York is.
And they can't relate it because everyone's talking about Cardi B.
Yeah, and everybody's talking about Cardi B. Stacy, do you have any of those little sound effects that she does? No? Nothing? Okay, that's not bad. That's not bad. You tried. So you grew up there. When did you move to the States?
I came here in 1999. I came for grad school. I was never expected I was going to stay here. So all the Dominicans like to come to New York. That's like, you know, half of the Dominican Republic is in Washington High. So I was never expecting, like, I'm going to move to New York. So I live in Boston. I live in Chicago. And then after grad school, my first job was at Ogilvy in New York.
And so that was your first tour?
And that was my first tour, and that was my journey into advertising in the U.S.
What was your job there when you were at Ogilvy back then?
You know, Ogilvy is one of those big agencies that have, they function as a teaching hospital, right? So they take you from the beginning. You start as a junior consultant, then become a senior consultant. From then you go to associate director, director level, and they train you, actually. They train you in marketing communication, digital, and all the principles, how to build brands. And they give
so it's almost like graduate school when you think about it.
It's pretty much a grad degree, absolutely.
What were you working on, really, at least initially, when you were there?
If you're Ogilvy, you're probably going to touch the IBM business, American Express, SAP. They have all these big blue chip brands that you're going to work on. So I work on those accounts.
And when you left, where did you head after you left
after
your first tour?
After I left Ogilvy to go to McCann to work in the U.S. Army. That was a very interesting experience. Very different from anything else that you have seen. First, it's a different culture. You have to report to generals. You have to get your story straight. But also, there are all these factors that affect actually how the Army recruit the U.S. population, what's happening in the environment that you have to take into account in order actually to craft the story, how you're going to engage with prospects, which means like, you know, people finishing high school in order to be able to appeal to them so they can join the Army.
So you spent some time making your way there. You've journeyed along the way. Then you ended up back there to some extent. And then you've since left and you've started up a consultancy, correct?
Yeah. So I wanted to focus on growth right now. And the reason why I wanted to move in that space is I think that's one of the big challenges they have brand today. We're moving into what I call the post-advertising world. You know,
did you say the pulse advertising world?
Post, right.
Post, yes, post advertising.
Post advertising world. The reason...
Let me pause you because that's an... I don't know that I've had anybody kind of call it that and call it out as that, but that really is what this is. This, we really are moving into, in essence, at least it feels like, a post advertising world because people do not want to be sold to.
No one wants to be sold. No one, I think, have wanted to be sold in the past. So the way that you build brand, the very basic level is, if you think about it, pre-purchase, which is advertising and PR, purchase, which is e-commerce and the store, and post-purchase, everything about CRM. Now, the problem with pre-purchase is, first, people don't want advertising. You see the rise in ad blocks. You see actually the people who have money, who pay, they're moving to ad-free platforms. So advertising in some kind of way is becoming a tax for the poor. That's a tough position.
Wow, a tax for the poor. That's interesting.
And the unliterally, the tech unliterally people. So right now, the market has been shrinking. It also means that you still, the business of brand is strong. And that's going to be sustainable. Still, people want to engage with brands that they trust. They want a value exchange with those brands.
That's people still want to do business with brands they know, like, and trust, which changes how you connect to them.
Yeah. It's not only me that
I wrote that
saying that. But, no, but it, what is interesting...
I wrote that 10 years ago, by the way.
What is interesting, Sean, is you have now the CMO of P&G saying... What's going to happen the next? How we're going to engage customers in a world where it's going to be ad-free? So they have to prepare for that. That's the challenge of today, how engaging customers right now.
But it's exciting, too, when you think about it, because you get, we've all been spending all this time at the top part of the funnel, TV advertising, outdoor advertising, all that, which is still relevant. But now I can at least say I want to engage. I love shoes, right? So I'd rather engage with somebody who shows me something really interesting about shoes, how the shoes are built or how this is done or who's the artist that designed it. I'd rather watch 30 seconds of that all day long than the same canned speech of, buy these shoes, they are made well. I mean, and isn't that exciting really when you think about it?
It is. And what is also more exciting is the fact that we're living...
There's more exciting?
There's more exciting than that.
Tell me more.
Because right now, when you think about the advertising business, or let's elevate it, the marketing business, we're in the business of changing behavior. That's the real business. You want someone to buy you something or buy more of what they're already buying. And when you think about changing behaviors, there are two ways you can change behaviors. One is you can increase motivation or you can make things easier for people. And the fastest way to change behavior is through action. And what is interesting right now is we are living in an interactive world, in a mobile-first or mobile-only world. So you're always interacting with a platform, with a video, with a brand. And that actually makes the experience more rich and more fulfilling because you can perhaps provide a higher value proposition to a customer. It's not just sending a message.
You know, that reminds me, when I was shopping recently in a retail store somewhere here in New York, I had somebody take a picture of the blouse and said, could I text you something from downstairs below in the warehouse to show you what else we have coming out next week? And I first hesitated. I don't want to give this person my number. But I did. And sure enough, they sent me a photo and it got me back into the store and they gave me a 40% off.
And did you also go out to dinner with him on a Tuesday?
No. Right?
There's some consumer protection going. How do you balance that, right?
But I thought that brought customer service to a whole different level. I
it
will go back and I will probably keep going back. The behavior changed.
And another point is expectations have changed and they change daily for the customer. The basic example how fast expectations have changed is Uber. When Uber entered in a city, you know, the waiting time because they didn't have enough cabs was about 10 minutes. Now if Uber actually say clicking in 4 minutes, you're going to get upset about
That's
it.
Right.
So today the expectation is the expectations are set up by Netflix, by Google. You're expecting things to be relevant, to be personal for you.
And easy.
And, yeah, and easy as well, because now we have the one click or the zero click by Amazon. So right now, sometimes people, they think in silo. And they say, well, in my industry, I don't see that. But it doesn't matter.
So with the last 5 minutes that we have, and thanks for coming, by the way. I appreciate you saying yes to us. I love following everything that you talk about on LinkedIn. I feel like I'm always smarter when I read your stuff. I want to give you a chance to talk about that last piece a little bit. And with the last few minutes, I want to make sure you get a chance to talk about the consultancy as well. The point that you were making, though, of the fact that there's an easiness to it and that some CMOs out there may feel like, well, we're not doing that in my industry yet. How do you make that pivot happen for your, if you're the CMO of a mid-sized brand, of a furniture group that's out in the Midwest or a hotel chain or a grocery chain, how do you help that change happen internally without hiring necessarily Rise Consulting, which you could also do, which probably would expedite the process, I would assume.
Well, I think there's an understanding that we live in a connected world, right? Your customer are not only the people who are in a specific geo or in your city, in your town, or your zip code. So everyone's connected. Everyone is connected with a device. So any point, anyone actually is a click away to go to the next store to buy a product. So your competition has changed, and the dynamic of the market has significant change. And the challenge is, if you don't change with the customer expectation, if you don't move at the speed of the customer, you are going to be disrupted, and you might lose your business, and your employees might lose their jobs. So the best way, actually, to be always ahead of the curve is always moving at the speed of the customer.
And hope that your CEO or hope that those others on the team are moving there with you. Listen, with the last couple of minutes, talk to us about the company. What are you building, and what are you hoping to be able to pull out of it?
So my hope is to help businesses, mid-size, small ones as well, to help them grow. Help them grow by first understanding what the area of growth. Normally, you can have a brand problem. That means you don't have a clear story, a clear position in the market. You might grow because you have an expectation problem as well with your value proposition. Or you might have a problem in terms of your performance. Are you connecting with customer in a relevant and personalized way? So the way I can help customers is by helping with the brand, helping with their value proposition, or helping with their performance.
And again, it sounds like everything is kind of wrapped into this connected experience to some extent. Last minute, what do you wish you knew more about? What do you feel like you still need to learn?
You know, I'm learning every day. I am a student, basically. That's how I define myself. There's no perfection. Perfection doesn't exist. So I don't aim for perfection. I'm trying to learn something new every day. There's so many things happening that you're just always catching up. You have to remain curious in your life. That's the only way, actually, that you're going to become better and keep it going.
Stacey, listen, any other final questions from your perspective?
Well, I like the idea of always being curious, how to handle, keep the growth in terms of, I mean, you just said something, and I'm nodding my head thinking, yes, it's finding sort of a different way of doing something. I don't know, I'm going back to that example of the text I received from my new favorite store here in Manhattan, where I'm getting that one-on-one customer experience. Client, she knows my style. She's sending me photos. Who would have thought that that's the way to get me back into the store?
Now, when are you going to move from New York to West Coast? And if you did, what do you call yourself if you go West Coast? Is there a...
We don't have that many Dominicans in the West Coast.
There's no Dominican West?
No. They're all actually in the West Side in New York. And we have plenty in Miami, though. So we like to concentrate.
And there's a Dominican South.
Yeah,
and I love
exactly.
The parade. There's an awesome parade here in New York, right?
Well, listen. Yeah, we do.
Alberto Brio, thank you so much again for joining us on the CMO Suite. If you want to find out more about Alberto, if you want to feel really smart, then what you need to do is you need to follow him on LinkedIn. Stalk him there. That's what I did. And you can also always find out more information about him on the CMOSuite.com. We'll have additional information there. Stacey, again, thank you so much for co-hosting this episode with me.
Thank you for having me.
And take us out of the show.
Thanks for hanging out in the CMO Suite. A podcast for marketers who want to be in the know. Presented by Connectivity Holdings.
Hey, it's Sean Halter reminding you that in less than 60 seconds, we have consultant Milton Pappas. So stick around.
You're a C-level manager. You shouldn't have to know the difference between behavioral or contextual targeting, but your agency should. Uconnex provides brands and biddable teams direct access to platforms like The Trade Desk, Google, Amazon, Facebook, OTT, and more. Their U.S.-based traders can train your in-house team or provide complete transparency with no minimums and CPM-based service pricing for true transparency. Something Mighty Hive, The Trade Desk, and Centro simply don't offer. Tired of being the smartest one in the room? Reach out to Uconnex today for a free demo. Uconnex, the world's leader in true, transparent, biddable media.
I am Sean Halter. I am your host, and we are in New York City. Co-hosting with me today and helping to produce is my great friend, Stacey Horton. Stacey, how are you?
I'm great, Sean. Thanks for having me.
Stacey, you're going to have to help keep me from talking so loud that I pop my mic all the time, and I'm super excited. We're kicking things off here with Milton Pappas, former CMO of Hudson Bay. He is a seasoned digital marketing and e-commerce executive with a track record of driving growth in the highly competitive retail space. Milton, how are you?
Good morning, guys. Great to be here.
Good morning. It is awesome and lovely to have you. Thanks for joining us on the show. First of all, were you just out at a big retail federation conference, if I'm correct?
NRF has their annual big show in New York City at the Javits Center every year. It's the second week in January, and great attendance this year. A lot of exciting topics and a lot of exciting vendors. So it was a great networking opportunity and also really opportunity to keep up with what's going on in the retail space.
And so how many people come to that event? It's a pretty massive event, I would assume.
I think they average about 30 to 35,000.
And I know that we had Doug Zarkin on last year. He's CMO over at Pearl Vision and Lexotica. I know he was at that event, which I would assume that many CMOs for many of the major brands end up going out to that event as well. Am I correct?
For sure. Yes, it's absolutely the event to be, to attend if you're in the retail space.
And so I've never been. And so tell me why that is. Is it just simply because it's an opportunity to network with a bunch of your peers out in the market? And at the same time, I'm assuming there's a trade show element to it of some sort. And so what all takes place at the event?
So I would say yes to all of the above. It's a great opportunity to network. A lot of the leading technology vendors tend to attend. They exhibit in the hall. There's a lot of really great stuff that NRF does. For example, there's a student program where up-and-coming future retail professionals are there. And you get to network with your peers in the industry. And oftentimes, you learn a lot more from the networking sessions than anything else.
Do you sit on that board as well, the NRF board?
So I'm on the shop.org advisory board, and that's basically the digital division of NRF.
Did they give you, with shop.org, did they give you some shares in the stock before you jumped on the board?
NRF is a trade association, but I have to tell you that it is truly an amazing opportunity to network with people in the digital and retail space.
How did you start your path into marketing?
I would say I didn't really come through the traditional path into marketing.
I feel like almost nobody thinks that. They do.
So I started out as a tech guy, like most kids out of school, trying to figure out what I wanted to do. And in my first gig as a tech guy, I got an opportunity to work with marketing teams.
Interesting.
In a telemarketing, teleservicing environment. And I saw how you could change the word on a script when you had the consumer on the phone, and all of a sudden you could drive a lot of sales.
So let me pause you there. Does that mean that we can blame you for the whole telemarketing industry? Was that all you? If we actually re-Google your name from a few years ago, is it going to be like, don't take a call from Milton?
No.
But yes, yes, no, me. No. But yes, yes, yes.
No, I mean, it was, for sure. I mean, in the 80s, telemarketing was explosive. Yeah. And I feel like it has driven a lot of the evolution of a lot of sort of the one-to-one communication now. So
that's where you started.
That's where
Where'd you grow up?
So I grew up in Connecticut. Okay. I live about 60 miles from New York City. And I'm fortunate enough to be able to come into the city every day and enjoy kind of everything New York City has to offer.
So you started in the kind of the telecom business.
Yep.
Perfecting the script to get people like us to buy stuff on our phone.
That's
back
right.
When people, you were the death of the landline in
the
essence,
death
right?
Of the landline, that's right.
And so in doing so, you're working with marketing teams, you said.
Yes.
And just helping them to basically perfect the pitch to some extent.
Exactly.
And so how long did you do that?
So I was in that role, I was in that profession for about 5 to 6 years. Then I moved into the publishing industry, and then I had an opportunity to actually move into a marketing role there. I was at Reader's Digest for a number of years in the publishing industry, and that's where I learned direct marketing. So I grew up in the direct marketing world, so I have been a performance marketer my entire life, most of my career.
For those people that don't understand what performance marketing is, How would you define that?
So I would define it as really being super focused on measuring the effect of your media in terms of what you're spending, what your ROI is, what the performance is.
You feel like that's obviously gotten a lot easier as the world has transitioned into digital and the ability to be able to at least create some levels of attribution. Has the whole industry, in essence, tried to turn itself into performance-based marketing?
I would say for sure. I would say there's so much focus now on measuring the effect of all media. You have opportunities to do targeted TV. You have now opportunities through mobile to measure attribution. If I run an ad on Facebook, how many people is it driving me into my store? So I think we're at a time now where measurement has become so key across the board in terms of measuring the effect of all media, but also we have a lot more tools now than we had years ago.
Do you feel like we almost have too many tools? I feel like sometimes when I talk to CMOs, and maybe they didn't come up the same way that you did, they did take what they thought was, of course, a strange path to marketing. As I said, almost all of us seem to some extent. It feels like the weight of the world now rests on a CMO or a VP of marketing or a global or whatever that is. And when you start thinking from a global level, it's even crazier because you need to know at that point, then you need to not only understand everything about a consumer in the US, but you need to understand everything about a consumer that's in a completely different country. And I can only assume, having done at least a little bit of traveling, that that's, I mean, it's hard enough to figure out Austin versus Akron, but how in the world do you figure out those pieces?
Well, for sure, it's a lot more challenging now than it has ever been. You have, mobile has driven such disruption in so many industries, especially from a media perspective. And the advantage to mobile now is I know where you physically are when you're on your mobile device. So I have an opportunity to really target my media, really be, local messaging, et cetera. So it's almost like, to answer your question, it's really about being a tech guy, a media guy, a creative guy. And I feel that starting out as a tech guy in my career, that really gave me an advantage when I got into this industry.
And so you made your way through that. You got into marketing. Did you say it was at
Reader's Digest?
That's right. And how long were you there?
I was there for about 12 years.
Okay.
So
that's a pretty long chunk of time.
It was. It was a nice chunk of time. And it was interesting because it was right when the internet and digital was disrupting the publishing industry. So it was a time where all of a sudden consumers had access to free content online as opposed to paying for printed publications, et cetera.
Crazy how that's changed the business, right?
Sure, absolutely.
So you're there really for some of that incarnation of that. You're actually seeing it while it's happening. Yes. And I know one of the things that's so interesting to me right now is you see all of these media companies today. We're at iHeart right now, and I think they've been more progressive than most when you really think about it. The fact that they realized pretty early on, this world's changing, guys. We can just be clear channel radio and take our heads and kind of put them in the sand, or we can realize that the dynamic of how people consume content is changing. How was that to see literally the whole, this 200-year-old print as a form of medium that people would pay for? How was that to kind of see that completely changing on its head, and how did Reader's Digest react to that as it was happening?
So it was, it was interesting because at the time, a lot of the disruption is really being driven by consumers. So most of the, like if you take retail disruption, for example, early on the disruption in retail was driven by retailers. And then eventually with mobile and the internet, now disruption's being driven by the consumers. So to actually see the evolution of how quickly the consumer was gravitating to consuming content online and then subsequently on mobile, it's like the industry really couldn't keep up with it. And I know that the industry has evolved now over time. There's a lot more digital content that's being produced. And, at the time we had a website, but we didn't have the type of digital content that Reader's Digest and other publishers are in now.
And to be fair, nobody did, right?
That's
nobody
true.
Really saw that coming. And I feel like, I don't know if you see it, and I'm excited to kind of unpack this a little bit, but that to me is kind of where TV is right now to some extent. Netflix, obviously, that story will go down in the history books of a complete disruptor who then made a very conscious decision to say, we're not going to do DVDs anymore. We're going to basically send all of this electronically. And I remember all of us who were big DVD fans were like, this guy's insane. If you remember the trade, back then it was like, fire this guy. He doesn't know what in the world he's doing. He's a complete idiot. The stock, crashed. And look at them today. They've completely transformed an entire industry, and everybody else was standing around left really flat-footed. The only one who seemed to have been able to kind of navigate their way through that is now Bezos. And so he's basically said, he's the Elon Musk to some extent, but perhaps a little more successful of saying, I'm going to completely change. This is why I'm going to compete with you directly. And to me, that all goes back to content.
Right. It is all about content. And retailers, publishers, et cetera, it's all about content. A retailer is producing content for their website, for their mobile device. It's product that translates into content through a digital medium. And Netflix, I'm a customer. I'm a huge Amazon.
Who's not, really?
It's true. And it's just so easy to consume content. And now, it's convenience, it's fast. And obviously, pricing is pretty favorable now, the way things have been set up with Amazon Prime and your ability to really leverage your membership to get content.
So we've got time for a couple more questions. Again, we want to thank you for coming over. I told you this would be painless, right?
Yes,
we told
for
you
sure.
we'd treat you with some kid gloves, right? So listen, we've got time for one more question. Again, This is Milton Pappas, a former CMO for Hudson Bay and a board member for, again, it's the NRF, am I correct? Yep. Shop.org. And so tell us about what's next on your path.
First of all, it could not be a funner time to actually be in this space right now. Digital media, e-commerce. I feel I'm very fortunate. There's something new every day. So I'm currently an interim chief digital officer at what used to be called New York & Company, now is Retail Wins. It's about a 900 million plus retailer. So super excited about to see their evolution, because I was there a few years ago just to see how they're developing as a brand, how their e-commerce business is developing. For me now, it's really about continuing to focus on the disruption, right? So some people like myself are kind of gluttons for punishment, and they embrace the disruption because when there's disruption, there's opportunity. And I think at the end of the day, if you're super focused on the consumer, thinking about he or she is consuming media, then it's really about understanding kind of what those opportunities are. And for example, social right now is really just, it really exploded with regards to the amount of, if you look at the advertisers now, that's Google, it's Facebook and Amazon. Those are the top three in the digital industry.
Sure. And again, to maybe put a little bit of a button on that as we wrap the show, social has also come into its own as well, right? It certainly evolved from where it was, where people were in it, they didn't know why, and now they're in it, and now they're figuring out how to kind of wrap the dynamic around that. Well, listen, Milton Pappas, we want to thank you again for joining us. I'm really excited that you became part of my journey in this industry. I'm excited about everything that I'll continue to learn as we watch your journey along the way. How was this for you today?
It was painless. I mean, I had a lot of fun. Thank you for having me, and I'm a huge fan of the podcast.
Well, thanks. We appreciate you listening in. Listen, if you want to find out more about Milton, you can follow him on LinkedIn, stalk him there. That's in essence what I did. You can also find out a little bit more information on him, as well as some additional questions from this episode by visiting us at thecmosuite.com. Stacy, please take us out of this episode. Thank you very much.
Thanks for hanging out in the CMO Suite. For marketers who want to be in the know, presented by Connectivity Holdings.